Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys. I'm your host, Joy Keys. I want to thank you so much for tuning in. You can follow me on Twitter at Joy Keys. Also, check me out on Facebook, Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys, and on Instagram, Saturdays with Joy Keys. You can also email me, SaturdaysWithJoyKeys@hotmail.com. I would love to hear from you. You have any comments, suggestions. Also, you email me when you want to get a prize, because that's what I do. I give a lot of giveaways and books and tickets and all types of things. So follow on social media, and then you have to email your answer to me. You can check out the show on Spotify, Stitcher, iTunes, iHeartRadio, Amazon Music, Google, as well as here at Blog Talk Radio. If you miss the beginning or you come in the middle, all the shows are archived on those different platforms and many more, and so you can check them out there. Just do a search for Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys, or do a search for Joy Keys and maybe the guest, and the podcast will show up on those various platforms. Well, I got an interesting guy today, a bit of a nerd, if I will. I'll call him out. And I can say that because I'm a nerd as well, you guys know. A little nerdy here. And he has a master's degree in computer science from Georgia Institute of Technology. He has studied other things. And he comes from, I guess I'll say, educational family. CJ Washington, good morning.
Good morning, Joy. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for agreeing to do the interview. Now, what coast? You're in Atlanta, so like, okay, it's not too early for you, because some people call from like the West Coast and it's like 8 o'clock in the morning. It's like,
No, I'm up. I've had my coffee, had a morning run. I'm good to go.
Oh, okay. See, look at this, people. Morning run, everything healthy. And now he's getting us to read. So those are all good things. So this book, The Intangible, and let me tell you, there are a lot of intangible things going on in this book, things that people are trying to reach for that they may or may not get to. I don't want to give too much away, but let's start off with computer science and now a writer. Like, where did the writing come in?
So the writing actually came before the computer science, interestingly enough. So my bachelor's degree is in biology. And my intention was to go to medical school. And I realized during my junior year of college that I wasn't interested in medical school. So I was a little aimless after I graduated. I worked in industry for a little while. I developed an interest in writing. I wrote some stuff, tried to get published, didn't really have any success with it. And at some point I decided I want to go back to school and study computer science. So I went to Georgia Tech, got a master's degree, put my writing on hold. And when I finished Georgia Tech, I realized that I'd missed writing during that period. So I was looking forward to getting back to it. I found a job, started writing, and that was the intangible.
Now, do you remember like writing when you were a kid? Do you remember a writer when you were younger that you really enjoyed and you thought this is maybe something I could do?
I did. You know, as a kid, I loved Choose Your Own Adventure books. I just had boxes of these Choose Your Own Adventure books. I absolutely loved them. And I would try to write my own. I don't know how successful I was at writing those. And, you know, I always loved to read. And writing was always something I was interested in. And, you know, I don't know what sparked me to finally decide to sit down and attempt writing a novel. But when I did, you know, I just fell in love with it.
Well, I understand this was like a short story first, right? Is that correct?
No, it was never a short story.
Or Phantom Pregnancy? What was that? Was that a novel as well?
Yes, that was my first attempt at writing about the topic of false pregnancy, which is basically where a woman believes herself to be pregnant and has all of the symptoms of pregnancy, but is not pregnant.
Right, right.
So that idea has been with me for a long time. And I sat down and tried to write it years ago. And luckily that project is in a drawer. A lot of time would pass and different things would come together before I came to The Intangible.
Now, there's a lot going on here. You got marriage, you got cheating, you got sex, you got like techie talk in here for all the nerds, the math and the consciousness versus the non-conscious. So there's a lot of things in here for people. Tell the audience, just in a little blurb, what the book is about.
So I would say The Intangible, it's about two married couples who are struggling to cope with unique difficulties they find themselves facing. Following a miscarriage, Amanda, who I mentioned earlier, she develops a medical condition that tricks her body into thinking she's pregnant. A second character, Marissa, is a mathematician who, following a loss of her own, becomes obsessed with communicating with the dead. Her husband, Patrick, is a neuroscientist, and he's dealing with the disintegration of his marriage to Marissa and also trying to help Amanda to understand what's happening to her.
Mm-hmm. And then we have Derek. People, watch Derek. Derek is like undercover, like low-key, but a lot of stuff that happens to Derek. You don't think nothing's going on with him? Just watch Derek. That's all I'm going to say. I don't want to say too much. But people nowadays think that marriage doesn't really work, that people have these open relationships, or some people have, like, one committed person, and then they have polygamous things going on. What did you learn about marriage when you were growing up?
I've never really considered the idea of like open marriage or anything, you know. I don't know if it could work. I'm sure it does work for some people, but it's never something I considered. So I would say that I learned that marriage is really about a commitment. You have kids and you raise your children together. That would describe my own marriage. But yeah.
So what about the cheating and also trust? Because that's something actually that's really big in the book, because partners from each side end up following their partners. Where does trust come in a marriage? How do you develop trust in a marriage?
Right. So, yeah, that's something that the book kind of does explore. You know, once trust is broken, it's really hard to regain trust. And, you know, that is kind of a theme in the book. You know, I would say that, you know, in healthy relationships, we tend to trust each other. Hopefully that trust will never be betrayed.
Right.
You know, when it is, it's hard to come back from that. So I think, you know, with most marriages, trust is there in the beginning. That's why you're together. And as long as neither partner does anything going too far to betray that trust, of course, people are going to hurt each other. The trust can remain. The question is, when it's broken, how do you get it back? And that's
right.
It's an open question. It's tough. Some people
Everybody's
seem to
different.
Get through it and others don't. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's another question too. Like, how long do you stay in a marriage that is having problems and both the various characters are dealing with that? And myself, I was like, okay, so you're not going to leave now? And then I'll read another chapter. Wait, you're not leaving yet? I'm like, you know, so that's an issue as well. Now, the women characters, like you talked about Amanda and Marissa, they both have some serious issues. You know, and back in the day, they probably would have been in an institution. I mean, that's how women would have been treated. They would have been an institution. I don't want to necessarily give away why Marissa might have been an institution, but let's just say she has some stuff she's going through, and when you find out, you might think, oh, she might need to be institutionalized as well. But they're not. thank God for, I guess, today's time. So one of the conversations you have in the book is like science and reality, also the church. And that's a big issue right now in our country, like the disbelief of science. Where do you stand on that? Like, how does science help us? Does it hurt us? Or should we have just faith?
Yeah, you know, I'm really disheartened by the prevalent distrust of experts and scientists at the moment. You know, so science does not tell us, you know, factually. It doesn't necessarily tell us what we should believe, but it does tell us where the evidence lies. So if we're trying to seek the truth, because, you know, seeking the truth is not about knowing the truth. It's about finding the best case for a set of facts or beliefs. And that's really
what
science does.
Now, you
know,
you sound like those test makers. You know, when you take the test, like I had to take a test for my license for social work, it's like, what's the best answer? Like, there are four answers here, but what is the best answer? You know, that used to be so frustrating when I would practice to take the test for my license, because it'd be like, oh, my God, in real life, this is what I'm probably going to do because this is what, you know, I feel is best. But you're telling me this is the best answer in the book. So sometimes it's hard for people, you know, there could be more than one answer, even based on science, reality, if you will. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and I think that's one of the difficulties in public discourse. If you have two people, one person is willing to tell you, this is, I'm telling you the facts. This is going to happen, mm-hmm. and this is why it's happening. And then another person will tell you, you know, I can't say with certainty, but the evidence suggests that X, mm-hmm. Y, and Z is going to happen. And a lot of people will listen to the person who's very confident and assured, and they may not know what they're talking about. You know, so
yeah.
I think that's one of the difficulties of pitting, especially when you bring politics into it, pitting science against beliefs that people have.
And that's really what is happening. I think power and money make people look knowledgeable, or can make people look knowledgeable, and more people follow them. And you say, well, if 100 people over here following this dude, maybe he knows what he's talking about. And my cousin Sarah said he knows what he's talking about, so I'm going to go over here. But then you got another guy or woman on the left side saying, but, you know, if you touch the sink and then you rub your nose, you're probably going to get a cold. But there's only 10 people over there. I don't, what? I'm not going to go over there. But 50 of your friends get a cold. You know, it's like, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm on the side of science myself, but not like absolute, like in terms of, like I said, there has to be some leeway for environmental issues, that like emotional other stuff that's going on with people. You know, people aren't just black and white science. But that's just something that you also bring up in the book. It is also talked about. Do you want to read some of the book? Is that still okay?
Sure, yeah, I can do
okay.
that. So I'll read part of chapter one. And here Amanda is learning that her mother and sister are going to visit Atlanta, where Amanda lives.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Meredith and I, her mother said, and Amanda was relieved by the change in subject, are coming to Atlanta this weekend. Clear your calendar for wedding dress shopping. Amanda nearly dropped the phone. The heat of panic flared in her cheeks and raced down her neck. Her hands tingled. She took the stairs by twos as she asked, why Atlanta? Charlotte is right there. She wants to go to the shop where you bought your dress. Remember how fun it was? Amanda didn't remember any fun. Meredith, 15 years old with a fashion sense to match, had talked more than the consultant. Their mother had bullied Amanda out of her first choice. Amanda's best friend, Beverly, had complained that it should have been just the two of them. And Amanda hadn't thought to invite Derek's mother, who'd acted as if she'd been excluded from the wedding. Amanda flung open the bathroom door and looked at herself in the full-length mirror. She turned to inspect her reflection and profile, then slowly lifted the hem of her shirt. The stretch marks tracing her sienna skin seemed more pronounced than they had just yesterday. She looked pregnant. Baby bump would not be denied. "I'm out of town this weekend," she lied, trying to keep the alarm out of her voice. "Oh, no, we'll reschedule. Maybe the weekend of the 16th? Would a baggy sweatshirt hide her bump? She hadn't told her mother she was pregnant, nor had she told her about the miscarriage. There was no way she was going to tell her, miscarriage be damned, that she was still pregnant. Well, not actually pregnant. She'd had two ultrasounds, and there was no fetal heartbeat and no fetus. But, especially at night, and this was incontrovertible to Amanda, she felt the baby move. Amanda hadn't told her mother so many things that she didn't know where to start. She absolutely was not going to start with that.
How do you tell your parents you're pregnant? You're not really pregnant. How do you talk to somebody about something that is intangible? What do you think? How do you talk to your kids about something that maybe you can't tell them the whole story?
That's a really good question. I have a 5-year-old, and I don't know if I do the best job. And the first thing that comes to my mind is something that happened maybe a year or two ago. So, I'm really interested in astronomy, and I was getting her interested in it. She loved the pink planet. I showed her pictures of the pink planet. And we watched different videos on YouTube about astronomy. And we saw a video that told us that the sun is going to explode. And I don't know when that's going to happen, 4 billion years, I could be way off. And, it's like the sun is going to explode.
Uh-oh.
So, I didn't want to tell her, no, the sun is not going to explode, because I don't want her to, learn it later and then look back and say my father wasn't honest with
me. Lie to me, yeah.
And actually, I wasn't honest with her. I wasn't honest with her. I told her that the sun would explode, but that before that happened, we would figure out how to move the planet to another part of space and another sun, and nothing would change.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that was the best way to handle not telling her the whole story.
Yeah.
But it was just me ad-libbing there.
What about Santa Claus and the Easter, and the Tooth Fairy? Have you talked to her about that yet?
Yes, and, she believes in Santa Claus. She hasn't lost a tooth yet, but she's waiting for the Tooth Fairy. It's crazy. A friend of hers just lost a tooth, and I was informed that $5 is the going rate for the Tooth Fairy.
Is the going rate,
So a lot of inflation there, yeah. I loved Santa Claus and Christmas growing up.
Yes.
And, I wanted her to have that. And one thing that has surprised me as a parent is that I've not been completely comfortable telling her about Santa Claus.
And why is that?
I guess just kind of teaching her to believe in this magic that isn't real.
See, that goes back to the scientist in you.
Yeah. Could it spill into other things for her? Just this ability to believe in things that just are not real. I think some of that's influenced by, what's happening in our world. I think 15 years ago, maybe I wouldn't have felt this way, but I do now. But despite it, we keep up the Santa Claus. She's super excited about Santa Claus coming. Actually, the first year, we told her Santa Claus was coming and she understood. We don't have a chimney. So I told him he'd come in through the back porch. She was like, he's coming in my house? And I was like, yeah, he's going to deliver your toys. She was like, but I don't know him.
I
was like, you'll get to know Santa Claus. So she was a little, not skeptical that he existed, but skeptical of a stranger coming into our home while she's sleeping.
Mm-hmm.
But, so we do Santa Claus. We do the Tooth Fairy. We love that stuff here, but I do have some discomfort that I didn't expect to have. around it.
Yeah, we learn a lot about ourselves being parents, and that's something that's also talked about in the book. Some of the characters become parents, and they have to deal with, I'll just say many characters deal with death and grief, and they're dealing with it in different ways. Have you had death in your life, and how have you dealt with the grief of it?
Yeah, so I have had death in my life. I think the hardest thing for me has been losing my grandparents, whom I was very close to.
Okay.
One of them passed away, and the other one kind of unexpectedly passed away 6 months later.
Were they the married couple that they both passed
away?
Oh, yeah.
They have been married. I think they've been married 61 years.
Mm-hmm. You know, there's a thing like broken heart, like a broken heart syndrome, like that literally.
I believe that, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I believe that happened. Yeah, so that was really tough. And, writing for me, one thing I do with my writing is I like to explore difficult topics and things we have to deal with in life. I don't necessarily find the answers. So I how do I cope with it? You know, I don't know that I necessarily coped well. Just kind of do the best I can. I know that they wanted me to be a happy person. So I tried to return to, my baseline, emotional state. In part for them. That was helpful for me. My characters are struggling with these things. I don't think they always get it right. There is some messiness, and that's what I find life to be.
Now, interesting, okay, you're an African-American writer, and so I'm reading the book, and I've read, oh, my God, I can't even tell you how many books I read, but I read a lot of books, and the show is mostly focused on African-American writers. And the issue of race really only popped its head like once or twice or maybe three times in the book. And actually, I had to go back after I was at the near the end, and I was like, wait, who? They did say that so-and-so was black. No, she's black. Why is that? Was that purposeful that you did not talk about that? You did not want that? Because there's an interracial relationship that happens, but you don't really say this is an interracial relationship. Was that purposeful for you not to bring this up?
No, it wasn't purposeful. And what I think it came down to for me is that there were so many issues in the book. And really trying to explore them, I maybe felt like I didn't have a lot of space for other things.
Okay.
When it comes to race in literature, I think it's very important to explore race in fiction. And I would definitely like to do it at some point with one of my books. But in this case, I would just say I was, the things that I was really focusing on in the book, so Marissa's grief and her obsession with communicating with that really didn't have anything to do with her race, and nor did Amanda's false pregnancy. And I was really trying to keep a tight focus on, those aspects of their lives. Yeah.
No, and that is just the reason I bring it up is because a lot of African-American writers have come on and said that publishers have wanted them to have this, like, overly dramatic focus on race, kind of, that's not necessarily what they came to write about. You know what I'm saying? So that's why it's cool in a way that you didn't bring it up, because – in a lot of cases, writers have told me people want them to bring it up and want them to stir the pot around race. And your book wasn't focused on that, even though some of the characters are black and some are white. You know what I mean? So, like you said, you were focusing on the fake pregnancy, and also, you know, the issue of, again, back to science, the math, and how Marissa is using that to deal with her grief. I feel that's what she's doing. That's just me. You guys got to read it and see what you guys think about it. So what's coming up for you next, though? We talked about a little bit before we got online. Well, you want to tell the audience what you're going to be working on next?
Sure. So I'm currently working on book two. I'm just about there with having a rough draft. And it's about what happens when a prolific killer for hire learns that he has a terminal illness. He decides that the only way to save his soul is to confess his crimes to authorities. And the novel explores the fallout from his confessions on two characters.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, how do you write? Are you a computer guy or do you handwrite with a pen? And where do you write? What is your space you're in when you decide to start writing?
So I'm a computer guy, which is a little surprising because when I first started, it was strictly, you know, handwriting with a pen. And I thought that's the only way I could write, you know, when I would type it up, you know, that would be kind of the revision process. But somehow, probably becoming conscious of paper usage and that kind of stuff, I moved to the computer, and I now feel like that's the only way I can write, straight on the computer. So, and I'm
now
when you're
writing, are you like in the office? Like when you're like, or you have to go outside? You have to listen to music.
So I basically will write anywhere I am. You know, I mentioned we have a 5-year-old, so she does not. She's not a big supporter of the writing process. So there's a place that I'll go to kind of get away. That's like a little office and write. Yeah, I actually did write recently on paper once we went to the beach. So I didn't want to try to, you know, take my laptop to the beach. So, you know, when I got a few minutes, I pulled out a notebook and wrote on paper, and that was nice. But, yeah, I write anywhere. You know, my first choice would be writing, like, on the beach or in a cabin in the mountains. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, I write from home.
Yeah. Now, if you had a superpower, what would it be?
That's a good question. A few things are kind of coming to me. My background is kind of artificial intelligence, machine learning. I would love to be able to create like a super intelligence to help me understand the world better. So I guess that would battle time travel. You go ahead, because I think I am worried about it. I think I'm worried about what you were going to ask.
What about Terminator? Like Sarah Connor Chronicles? Like, dude, what? Huh?
Yeah, it's a good thing that I don't have superpowers, so we don't have to worry about that. Because I tell you, I'm nowhere near knowing how to create a super intelligence.
They're very close.
The field is moving quickly. It really is. It's exciting and it's scary.
I remember I saw this robot like do these gymnastic moves with such flexibility, like whatever gears they had, it did flips and it like did cartwheels. It was like doing all this stuff, and I was like, oh. And now we have, you know, in our homes we have televisions we can talk to, you know, security systems we can work with, our phones, all these things. So it is on the edge. If you had $100, what would you do with it?
If I had $100, I would. I'm actually going to take a page from my daughter. She was asked the same question and brought home an assignment, and she said that she would give it to someone who did not have money.
Okay,
I'm going to learn from her. Yeah,
an altruistic heart. I'm sure she got that from her parents.
Well, we're getting it from her. One of the two.
We do, you know, as parents, we learn both ways. It we give them stuff, and then they kind of ignite and open our hearts a lot of times to things that we might have in this, but it just really, I think, opens us up more. I think about the issue of love. Like, loving a child is completely different than loving another adult. For me, I feel it's like you would lay yourself on the tracks for them, you know? I'm not saying you wouldn't lay yourself in the tracks for your wife, but I don't know. What do you think? Is there a difference between, like, loving an adult and loving your child?
Yeah, I would say there is, only because, you know, my experience, and I think a lot of people's experience, when you have a child, it's something, it's a love that you haven't experienced before. So, you know, even if you can't articulate it, because I want to say that I would lay down on the track for my wife, and I would do the same for my daughter. But yeah, there's something unique about, you know, having a child and your love for him or her.
You know, in the book, one of the characters who, and this is interesting, the male character becomes very intimate emotionally. Not, I don't want people to get the wrong idea, but it's emotional love with a child. And you show the journey of that male character. I don't want to give away who that is, but that is also unusual, because normally that would be a female character in that spot. What made you decide to put the male character in that spot?
Well, you know, he stepped in when he had to, because no one else was going to step in. And in the process of stepping in, it became very intimate for him. So he may have started in this place where someone needs to do this, I'm going to do this, to I can't imagine doing anything but this. I can't imagine not doing
this. Right. So, last question, peanut butter or jelly or turkey and cheese?
Peanut butter and jelly.
And what makes a good peanut butter and jelly sandwich?
The bread.
Bread.
I can't tell you what about the bread, but I know good bread when I taste it.
I know good bread when I taste it. Is it like the white Wonder Bread, or is it like, I don't even know if they make that anymore, or is it like whole grain, like 10, 12 grain from Whole Foods type of thing?
You know, I really work hard to enjoy the whole grain, but white bread just tastes better to me.
Tastes better to you. Okay, is it the strawberry, grape? What kind of jelly are you? Like peach? What's your jelly?
Strawberry.
Okay, and do you have like the pieces of strawberries, or is it like kind of like the jelly, like just jelly? Like no fruit pieces, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I would rather either eat strawberries or eat strawberry jelly, but not kind of mixed
together. All right.
Yeah.
All right. Well, you heard it here first, people. Just jelly, not like the jam type of, you know, from the farmer's market type of thing. You know, we just claim. CJ Washington, thank you so much for coming on this morning. Where can people find you on social media?
So I am on Twitter and I am on Instagram, and I do have a personal website with that people can use to contact me.
And
I love doing
CJ Washington.
Stuff, so, yes.
Okay, good. I'm going to give away some copies of your book. So I want to encourage people to follow me on Twitter at Joy Keys. Again, check me out on Facebook, Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys, and on Instagram, Saturdays with Joy Keys, so that you could possibly win a copy of The Intangible by CJ Washington. Thank you so much, CJ, for coming on. You can go back to sleep now or go rough and tumble with your child, whatever's on your plate. I'll talk to you soon, okay?
I've enjoyed it. Talk to you soon. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Again, if you've missed the beginning of the interview for some reason, you can check us out on Spotify, Stitcher, iTunes, iHeartRadio, Amazon Music, Google, as well as here at Blog Talk Radio. The show will be archived in about 15 minutes or so. I encourage you guys to follow me so that you can win a copy of The Intangible. And again, there's a lot going on in the book. You got marriage, you got death, you got science, cheating, you got sex. I want to say that because I know sometimes that's important. Like, okay, is this boring? No. So, fake pregnancy, you know, that's something like you don't read about every day. That's in there, and that's really interesting. And actually, that's a true thing that can happen to a woman. They can have all the symptoms of, like, being pregnant, but they're not pregnant. Like, their body will change and everything. So take a look, a glance at the intangible, or if you want to try to win a copy, follow me on the social media. And I hope to hear from you next Saturday. You can always call in 516-387-1745. That's the call-in number. It's the same for every show. It doesn't change. And you can always check out the show at www.blogtalkradio.com/joykeys. And email me, SaturdaysWithJoyKeys@hotmail.com. I will talk to you later.
Adopt US Kids presents What to Expect When You're Expecting a Teenager. Learning the Lingo.
GOAT, G-O-A-T, acronym, stands for Greatest of All Time, as in spaghetti sandwiches for dinner. They're my fave. Dad, you're the GOAT.
You don't have to speak teen to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same. Visit AdoptUSKids.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt U.S. Kids, and the Ad Council.